Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
This episode is brought to you by Gilt. So when it comes to building wealth, taxes are such a big part of the strategy. And even if you're already filed, being proactive about this year to lower your future liability is so important. Gilt actually provides a proactive approach to tax strategy, combining innovative technology and expert CPAs. By creating personalized tax strategies for your unique financial needs of multiple revenue streams, M&As, restricted stocks, various investments, and more, you can keep your hard-earned money. Their proprietary platform ultimately gives you the full transparency of your tax management and direct communication with your CPA to reach your financial goals and grow for your wealth faster. So again, you know, if you're interested on this, go to joingilt.com. And they are actually on the show notes that I'm going to be posting a very special offer for you all that you can actually enjoy. So again, you know, joingilt.com. All righty. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a very, very exciting guest. You know, we have an exciting guest. We're going to be talking about all the good stuff that we like to hear: building, scaling, financing, all of the above. But without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Pushkar Mukawar. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Great, Alejandro. Glad to be on the show.
So originally born in India. So how was life growing up there? Give us a little of a walk through memory lane.
Sure. Born in India. I kind of grew up in a second tier small town called Nagpur, which is right in the center of the country. And, you know, I come from a community of small business families. And growing up, I just saw the challenges with small businesses face when it comes to access to credit, and that kind of stayed with me. I went to college, so moved to the US for college, and then kind of, you know, also worked in the US for a few years. So I did my undergrad in computer science, but then I sort of switched gears and moved to financial services. Then also ended up doing my MBA in the US before deciding to move back to India.
And why? I mean, obviously, in this case, you know, you had, as you were saying, you know, all your family, you know, you saw there the issues with the lack of access to credit. I mean, it sounds like business, you know, was something that, you know, you wanted to do. I mean, you were seeing people, you know, around you having their own companies, you know, left and right. I guess two questions here. Number one is, why not, you know, studying business right away? You know, obviously, you know, you ended up going to Wharton, which obviously you had it in mind, but, you know, sounds like computer science was the first stop. So why was that the first stop? And then the next question that I would like to ask you, you know, based on what you just shared, is you knew that you wanted to launch your own business. So why did you go and work for other companies like Capital One? So let's go with the first one. You know, why did you study computer science instead of business?
Sure. So I think India is a very traditional kind of society. And I think typically most people opt for one of two career options. It's either you become a doctor or you become an engineer. And of course, you know, there's a host of other options. But in general, I think the community I grew up in, you know, education was a big focus area. And I don't think during that time, studying business at an undergrad level was something which most people did. And I generally enjoyed mathematics and, kind of everything to do with mathematics. And I think computer science at that point was supposedly like a hot area. And I did kind of enjoy whatever computer science exposure I had, right? So when it came to kind of picking my major for undergrad, I thought computer science would be very interesting. Obviously, I wouldn't go on and say that I had the foresight that technology is going to become like, you know, enabler for a lot of other things over time. But at that point, computer science just seemed as a very interesting area, something which because I loved math, physics and most of the mathematical sciences, I think I felt like that was kind of in line with, you know, my interests. Right. While the idea was to always start a business, I thought that having a technical undergrad would generally be helpful and would be something which which is something which would be sort of stay with me, you know, whatever I choose to do in my career eventually. Yeah. And then I think your second question was around, you know, if I wanted to start a business, you know, why not jump in right away? Why go through sort of working with other companies and so on and so forth, right? So to me, I think having grown up in India, I think part of me always believed that I should get global exposure. I should also spend time abroad. A lot of my distant relatives were already in the US. And I think part of me always sort of wanted to step out and kind of experience, you know, living and working in a completely different cultural setting. So when the opportunity came by, I decided that it made sense for me to first initially sort of move to the US for education and then also get some years of experience behind me. Something which will just expose me to business, right? And working in a larger organization, just help build skills, which would be relevant even as I went to business school and then eventually launched my own business. So it was something which, while I wanted to always start my business eventually, I felt, kind of working in a larger organization for some time would be a good step towards that journey.
And obviously Wharton, you know, it's a phenomenal school. You know, they are great. You know, you even have like some of those competitions and, you know, they ask you to put together a business plan for something, you know, as the end project, you know, like really, really interesting stuff and great initiatives there, you know, which really pushes people into building their own companies. I mean, there's incredible companies that have come out of there, like Warby Parker and a bunch of others. But one thing that here that really strikes me is, you know, at this point, you know, you are in the U.S., you know, you've come to the land of opportunity, pursuing the American dream, and you decide to go back to India, you know, versus, you know, doing something of your own here in the U.S. So why going back to India?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I never really felt at home in the U.S. I think for me, it was always like I wanted to go to the U.S., sort of work there, get some experience there. But part of me always wanted to be back home and do something back home in India. So for me, it was always very clear that eventually I wanted to return back. And, I think business school seemed like the right kind of, juncture in my professional journey, where post that, I think I had an opportunity to return back to India. And I sort of capitalized on that. The other thing which was also parallelly happening, I think, as things progressed, was that when I went to the US back in 2003-2004, there were not enough opportunities in India, right? So if you kind of pursued, you know, higher education, went to a top business school like Wharton, there were not many opportunities back home, neither on the startup side nor on kind of professional side, right? Which were paying well enough and the right set of opportunities for somebody who had actually gone through that kind of a professional journey. So part of me, I think, so one thing which also evolved over the 10 years which I spent in the US is that a lot many more things started happening in India, right? The financial services industry overall evolved in India. You had a lot of foreign institutional investors which started setting up shop, startups started emerging in India. Of course, there were not enough successes by then, but we had already started seeing a number of venture capital firms coming to India, a number of startups emerging and starting to grow in India. So I felt like if I was to take a bet on my career longer term, and personally, I anyways wanted to be in India, it just seemed like India would be the right place for me to be. So I did initially move back, joining a venture capital firm so that I could just get exposure to the market and really understand, because since I'd never worked professionally in India, wanted to spend some time kind of really understanding the market. And then, you know, but at some point felt right that it was the time to take a step back and like sort of, you know, take the plunge in entrepreneurship.
So at what point did you feel it was right?
So Because I think the eventual goal was always to start my own venture. As I started working in the venture capital industry, I felt like the role was a lot more about deal making and not as much about actually doing operations or building something. So I started thinking about what could I do, right? And I think one of the inhibiting factors at that point was I didn't have a co-founder, you know. So I didn't have, neither did I have like a narrowed down opportunity that, okay, this is what I'm going to go do once if I do take the plunge into entrepreneurship. And neither did I have a co-founder. So I reconnected with actually one of my close friends from Wharton who was in the Valley at that point. And he had post-Wharton joined Cisco CorpDev. So he was also sort of working there, but he was also kind of inching to, you know, take the plunge. And we started talking, and given our backgrounds, both of us had spent a number of years in finance and were technologists with, by background. We started exploring opportunities within fintech. And I think at some point, both of us felt like, hey, you know what, the only way we are going to make anything happen is if we quit our full-time jobs and go all in. So, basically 3 years after working for 3 years after business school, I felt it was the right time for me to step back, like, you know, to take the plunge.
Well, taking the plunge, Drip Capital. So, what is Drip Capital for the people that are listening? What is the business model of Drip Capital and how do you guys make money?
Sure. So we are essentially, so our mission is to really enable small and medium-sized businesses to realize their full potential. And we focus on offering working capital solutions for small and medium-sized businesses. We essentially offer two kinds of products, because working capital is a big challenge for businesses. Either their capital is stuck in receivables or they need to make payments to their suppliers, so in payables. So we offer two kinds of solutions to small businesses. One is a receivables financing solution where a business who is approved on our platform can essentially submit an invoice and get paid instead of waiting 60, 90 days, can get paid upfront for a commission or for a fee which they pay to us. The other product we also offer is a payables financing solution where instead of the business making the payment to their supplier, we make the payment to the supplier on the behalf of the business, and the business can get flexible payment terms, could be 30, 60, 90 day terms, right? So essentially what this enables the businesses to do is that it enables them to unlock working capital, which they can use to buy more inventory, manufacture more goods, sell more, and hence grow their business, right? And working capital is one of the biggest challenges which small businesses have, not just in emerging markets, but also in developed markets. And that's the product or that's the solution we are looking to really solve for, right? And that's the core business. However, I think working with a number of small businesses, what we've realized is that when it comes to trade or when it comes to kind of growing their business, beyond working capital, businesses have also other kinds of challenges, right? And we've also now started offering a Forex solution because a bulk of the business we do is more cross-border in nature. We've also now started offering a Forex solution on our platform. And over time, the idea would be that can we add other kinds of products and services, which just makes the life of a small business easy.
And what were some of the early days challenges that you were experiencing, and especially compared to having seen, you know, some of those companies, some of your friends, you know, at Wharton that went on perhaps, you know, to start their own companies? What were some of those challenges to that were a little bit different because you were in India?
So when we decided to launch, I think my co-founder was in the Valley, I was in India. So we, on day one itself, had like kind of a cross-border team and presence, right? Which posed its own set of challenges because we obviously had to, spend a lot of time traveling. We had to kind of communicate with each other. We were also not exactly sure what specific, while we had a broad idea that we wanted to do something within fintech, and within fintech, we were more excited by credit, because that was an area which also capitalized on our strengths, my experience in Capital One, my co-founder's experience having worked at BlackRock and done a lot of work on credit markets. Within credit as well, we were not 100% sure on what opportunities made sense, right? So a lot of the initial time was really spent on experimenting with different ideas, right? Small business was exciting, but then, you know, within small business, what specific product do we offer? What segment do we go after? Was something which we were still kind of, you know, figuring out, right? And a lot of what we did, I think, as first-time entrepreneurs, first-time founders, was also doing things literally step by step, right? We walked trade shows. We tried to talk to a lot of small businesses. We started with a product, which then we realized was just difficult to scale up, you know, and so on and so forth, right? And then combine that with the fact that both of us were in different geographies, made things even more challenging. But I think one thing led to another. And, you know, we within small business segment, we had launched initially with a product which was focused more on US small businesses, but then realized that it was just difficult to acquire customers in the US at scale. And that's when the kind of model pivoted to focusing on Indian small businesses which were exporting, right? And you know, that's where we started seeing a lot of traction, and that's where we launched our product and Drip Capital as it is today, really started with that being the segment of the market we focused on initially.
Hey guys, this episode is brought to you by .tech domains. I mean, I can tell you one thing, and that is that as a founder, you're always thinking about branding. Now, one thing that is very important in that, you know, is that you need traction, you need to grow, you need to succeed. And having a name that is recognizable on a really amazing domain is the way to go. So that is why it's very important to establish the online presence with a clear and distinguishable identity. And you can do that with .tech domains. So .tech domains are the go-to namespace to build anything in tech. They have actually helped many brands in the industry to make a name for themselves, just like 1x.tech with their advanced Androids designed to replicate human movements and behaviors. So really, really, really cool stuff and cutting edge. And again, thousands of companies like this, you know, are also taking advantage of .tech domains. So also remember that .tech domains can do the same, you know, for your company. They're also providing a great offer to every single one of you in the DealMakers audience. It's 1 year domain for $10 and a 5 year domain for $50. So head now to the special URL, which is go.tech/dealmakers. And that is again, go.tech/dealmakers. So go get your own domain. And then in terms of regulation too, you know, how does it work? You know, because obviously, you know, here in the US, you know, as we know it, you know, fintech companies, you know, they're heavy on the regulatory side. So, you know, obviously, as you were saying, you know, you had, you know, different, you know, people in different, you know, sides of the world, you know. So how does that work too, you know, from a regulatory, you know, perspective?
Yeah. So we started in India and the focus was, so the first focus was, can we work with small businesses in India which were exporting and essentially do receivables financing product for them, which I said is one of the core products we offer, right? Now, of course, as we started in India and we started kind of acquiring customers in India, we also did a fair amount of work on really understanding the regulations governing this kind of a business model in India to begin with. And I think after seeking like the opinion from the right set of lawyers and advisors, we were comfortable that this model obviously was something which was blessed by them, and you know, the current regulations in India allow us to sort of continue operating this, right? And that has been a big focus area for us given the space we are operating in. So beyond India, this next market we entered was Mexico, which was the second international market which we launched in. And again, there as well, we did the relevant regulatory work required to get the right regulatory licenses and everything in place to be able to operate in Mexico. And the third market was US. US was a market we already domiciled in, you know, so we were already a licensed entity in the US, which made it easier for us to sort of scale up in the US, right? As it stands now, we operate in these three markets, which is India, Mexico, US, and the focus will, given that the opportunity in these markets itself is very, very large, at least over the course of the next 12, 18 months, the focus is to be continuously going deeper in these markets. And as we kind of look at other markets, we'll also obviously have to figure out the right regulatory, regulatory compliance, which we need to ensure we are in compliance with.
And from a fundraising perspective, how much capital have you guys raised to date for the company?
We have two kinds of capital we need for scaling up a platform like this, right? So on the equity front, obviously the equity capital is required to, of course, scale up operations and kind of build a business. And then the raw material for us is really the debt capital or the capital which helps fund the assets which we originate, right? Now, on the equity front, we have raised four rounds of institutional funding, about close to $95 million so far. Our major investors are Accel Partners, Sequoia Capital. There's a fund called Wing. Y Combinator was one of our early backers, Initialized Capital. Last round, we also had a couple of strategic investors come in, our TI platform and, Coppel. So this is the equity side. On the debt side or on the asset financing side, we've had a mix of both institutional and non-institutional investors. We've worked with a bunch of high net worth individuals, family offices, certain smaller credit funds. But on the institutional side, we have two major partners. One is a community bank called East West Bank, and the second one is Barclays. These are the two major funding partners we've had who we kind of onboarded in the last 18 months or so. And I think that's the side which we continue to scale up as we originate more and more. And we continue to engage with all different banks and, other kinds of institutions which are interested in the assets we originate. Yeah.
And on the debt side, how much have you guys raised? I didn't catch that.
So in terms of capacity or debt capital raise, it's upwards of $350-400 million. Yeah.
Okay, got it. And that you mentioned that debt capital, obviously, the equity side for the people that are listening is more for, the business, the employees, the operations, but the debt capital is more for the actual business model, no? To be able to facilitate the basically the services that you guys bring to the end the customer, no? So very, very cool. I mean, obviously, I'm sure that has, changed a little bit as you guys were, getting even more polished as a company. But my God, getting the people that you've mentioned, involved, like Sequoia or Accel, I mean, we're talking about some of the best investors in the world, for startups. So how were you able to get those, especially since, the operation was a little bit far away from the headquarters of these firms?
Yeah. The good thing has been that, because we were a global company, I think for us, and some of these funds are global. So we actually had both their India and the US team engage with us, which I think kind of is the best of both worlds. We get both the perspectives. Obviously, we went through the fundraising process like every startup does, meeting a bunch of investors along the way. But I think what really, in my view, stuck with some of these investors is the scale of the opportunity we were going after, right? I mean, we were talking about small business credit. We were talking about global trade, and we were looking at multiple markets. And I think that was what was perhaps the most exciting thing for them. And I think combining that with the fact that, both me and my co-founder had years of experience working within financial services as an industry, sort of helped, right? I think they've been great supporters, great partners as we've kind of embarked on this journey. They're very actively involved in the company and have been advising us and been like great folks to bounce off ideas as we scale up the company to the next level. So
I guess as you're now thinking about scaling the company and taking it to the next level, obviously to all those investors, you had to sell them on a vision, and a compelling future that you were living into, no? So imagine you were to go to sleep tonight, Pushkar, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Drift Capital is fully realized. What does that world look like?
Yeah. The vision would be to really be the platform of choice for small businesses in multiple markets, to be a one-stop solution for addressing trade needs for these small businesses. Of course, working capital is the core DNA we have. That's the business we've built and we continue to scale up. But over time, the vision would be to perhaps add other products and services, which just makes the life of a small business easy. We want to continue building our global presence. As I said, the focus, at least in the short term, would be to continue going deeper in the markets we're operating in. But we see opportunities, multiple opportunities to expand from our presence in, let's say, Mexico to parts of LATAM, South America. We also see opportunities within Asia. US itself is the largest buyer in the world. So, you know, there are obviously opportunities to grow there. But yeah, that would be the vision, that, you know, if we are able to enable many, many businesses, small businesses, to realize their full potential, I think we would be successful. Yeah.
And when it comes to scale, you know, especially, I mean, you were alluding to now that basically you guys have done like multiple rounds of financings. You know, when I think about a round of financing, is basically you are bringing the right people that are going to help you unlock the next life cycle of the business. So as you have, you know, gone from one cycle to the next with Drip Capital, I mean, how have you seen, you know, those challenges shift from one cycle to the other?
Yeah. So you're right. I think initially, you know, we wanted to get investors who were at appropriate at that stage. So, for example, going through Y Combinator was a great experience. They're one of the best accelerators, incubators, and it was great for us to sort of participate in that program. And then I think as we went along, you know, getting more venture capitalists involved who are seeing the potential in the opportunity we're going after. And I would say more recently, I think we've been engaging more with strategic investors who could help us unlock the next phase of growth and the kinds of investors we're bringing on board. So TI Platform is one of the investors who were significant investors in our last round. And they run one of the largest LP platforms, right? Connected to a lot of insurance companies, a lot of institutional investors. And that is really one of the key areas for us to continue growing. Can we unlock more and more investors on the supply side? Because ultimately, you know, that is also one of the constraints to growth, that can we get more and more investors who are interested in our kind of assets, right? So bringing them on was super helpful. We also brought on board a very large family office from Mexico, which will help us expand within Mexico as well as the broader LATAM and South America region, right? So I would say that as we think forward and we think about who would be the right set of investors for us, I think, yeah, the investors who would be the right set for us will be some people who will be helping us on either the supply side or the demand side, unlocking opportunities for us. Those would be the right set of investors, yeah.
In terms of also of, you know, taking a look at the past, you know, and taking a look at the past with a lens of reflection, you know, if, you know, obviously now, you know, incredible, the wealth of knowledge, you know, what you guys have been able to accomplish with the business. If you were able to go back in time, you know, let's say I put you into a time machine and you're able to go back in time, perhaps to have a sit down, you know, with that younger Pushkar that is, you know, coming out of one of those classes at Wharton and thinking about what kind of company you were going to build, you know, in the venture world and that excitement, no, of living into that future. But let's say now you're right there with that younger Pushkar and you're able to give that younger Pushkar one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
So one piece of advice would be definitely start sooner. Then latter, I think a part of me, you know, if I reflect like 10 years back, I just sort of, you know, I was too kind of afraid to take the plunge, right? And I kept procrastinating that decision on when to launch and what should I have before I launch, right? For 3, 4, 5 years, I just kept thinking about it, right? I think the ideal time for me to start would have been right to start during Wharton, right? I think the second key piece of advice I would give is that the most important and the best thing to do when you want to launch is just talk to your users, right? I think a lot of times, you know, us MBAs and ex-consultants, you know, tend to focus a lot on reading research reports or preparing pitch decks or market studies, right? And a lot of it is irrelevant. At the end of the day, I think what really matters is, are you making something which people are willing to pay for, right? And the only way to find that out is actually launch fast. And if it's okay, it fails, right? But launch fast and talk to your users, right? And I felt that during the early parts of Drip, we did spend or waste a lot of time, you know, doing things which didn't really matter much. And what mattered really was the time we spent with our users. So,
I love that. Now, Pushkar, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
So they can reach out to me on email, pushkar@dripcapital.com. Yeah, that would be the best way.
Amazing. Well, easy enough, Pushkar. Well, hey, well, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show. It has been an honor to have you with all of us.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Alejandro.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.